Thank you everyone. It's a great honor for me to be here. And I would like to thank the center and Alisa for having me here, and my sponsors for my PhD, the Darwin Trust of Edinburgh. And to, I would like to start with giving a rough idea of the talk. So the background research I'm working on is on elaborating on a realist interpretation of quantum mechanics. So, and towards this this aim, I will explore presenting a relatively novel approach to quantum theory, which is called the closed theory stance. This work done is within this framework. I would like to clarify that work done within this framework does not necessarily give solutions for problems that arise in other frameworks, because this is a whole alternative approach in its own. And the contribution to the literature, to the philosophy of science, into this problem is to, at least at this stage, to articulate the problems in a different way. And the talk will be about this, about how the problems can be thought from a different perspective. And I will present this closed theory stance, and you will very quickly find that there are internal issues with holding this idea. But of course, in philosophy, there are problems with all of the frameworks. So that's not particular for this stance. And to clarify, some of the issues that I will touch on can be taken to be general in philosophy of science, in physics, and in the relationship between different sciences and physics, and in the relationship between different theories in one specific science. So I will just talk about physics and just talk about the relationship between quantum mechanics and classical mechanics, because I think that's the center of gravity of this problem. And then I don't want to convince anyone that you should think like I think. The only claim I'm making is that this approach deserves to be considered, that deserves some attention. So first I will introduce the closed theory stance, discussing what I mean by the word stance, which has some weight in the philosophy of science, and then I will elaborate more on the content of the stance. So the closed theory stance is motivated or originated in the work of Werner Heisenberg, who was one of the most important physicists of the 20th century, and also a founding father of the field of quantum theory. Now, he had a very strong philosophical background, and when it comes to his philosophical views, he's a very controversial author. He's sometimes contradicting himself, sometimes being very controversial and speculative, and it is a specific problem in the literature to say what he really thought in general. And there's some literature about that. For example, Christian Camilleri's PhD thesis was about this. I will not talk about Heisenberg in general. I will only take one specific thing that he talked about, which is a closed theory view, which we can get a grip on today mainly because of Alisa's papers from 2004-06 and his book from 2008. So I will take that a bit independently of Heisenberg's general view. So, what did Heisenberg say about his view on closed theories? There are many things, and there are very controversial things, but there are three main thoughts in the closed theories view. One is the notion of domain, right? So, he says a closed theory is related to a limited domain of applicability. That is controversial because normally, people think that theories are universal, that they apply in all scales and everywhere. And he says, no, there is a limited domain where the theory applies. And then he says, in that domain, the theory is perfectly accurate.
So each one of the statements that you make to the closed theory can be contrasted with more traditional views. So that contrasts with the view that theories are only approximately true or are just an approximation, and he says no, they are perfectly accurate. And then that a closed theory is an ultimate description of the phenomena that it describes. And that, again, brings tension with, for example, the notion of progress in science, the notion of, that we have a theory and then we modify a different bit of this theory and then we progress one little step and then we modify another bit of the theory and then we progress again. But he says no. If you change a little bit of the theory, you change the whole system, the whole framework. And this theory, you cannot modify it unless you modify everything. Okay. So those are the three main things, basically. And then with those three things, he identifies four theories back in 1958 at least. He talks about Newtonian mechanics, thermodynamics, electrodynamics, and quantum theory. And
quantum mechanics, not quantum theory.
Well, that's controversial, right? Quantum theory.
What do you mean by it?
Yeah, let's say quantum mechanics.
Thanks.
So some observations that I want to make from this thing that he says. So he explains these closed theories and then he says, therefore we have this and this theory. So some observations. Firstly, he doesn't include thermodynamics into Newtonian, into classical physics. Why? Because he says there are some notions in thermodynamics that cannot be reduced to the language of classical mechanics, such as entropy and the potentials and all that. So there we have some view which is different to the traditional views of revolution in science. And then he doesn't even talk about general relativity as one of the closed theories. So you say, why is that? Well, he says general relativity is still in development, it's not yet closed. So why do I see this meaningful? It's because he doesn't restrict the number of closed theories. In principle, we can build whole new closed theories.
So I think that's important.
So now I presented the closed theory view given by Heisenberg. And now I would like to take this further into something like a stance towards quantum mechanics. And there's some debates about what we mean by stance. But I like this quotation from Van Prassen. He says, a philosophical position can consist in a stance, attitude, commitment, approach, a cluster of such, possibly including some propositional attitudes such as beliefs as well. But it cannot simply be equated with having beliefs or making assertions about what there is. And then he uses this principle to defend his empirical stance. I don't want to advocate the empirical stance. I want to take his kind of methodology. The message behind this for me is we, as a philosopher, should be honest with ourselves and should say explicitly why, what kind of things we believe and what are the principles around which we construct our views.
And I think that's important. So for example, let me illustrate that. So if you are an instrumentalist, if you speak with, there are many physicists that are instrumentalists and they are concerned with producing algorithmic tools, with producing empirical predictions, with producing formulas that are true in some experiments. So say that you talk to your favorite physicist and you say, yeah, but what is going on in the experiment? You have the photoelectric effect. What is really going on in the wire? You're illuminating. What's going on? And you say, that's not my problem. They can laugh at you if you ask that. Because that's not a question that they take seriously. Why? Because their stance is instrumentalist.
is to take the theories as an instrument for producing empirical predictions. And a story about that, a story about how that interacts with the world out there, that's philosophy. I mean, I'm not saying that is wrong. I'm only saying that is the stance that they take.
Let's skip this.
But if you talk to a structural realist, right? They are realists. They want to connect with the world existing out there. And they identify some structural continuity across theory change, from special relativity to Newtonian physics. They see some structural connection. And they are realists about that structure. So if you tell them, okay, but what are the entities and what are their properties? They will say, listen, that is not the way I want to do my philosophy. So that's not their stance.
So that's the only thing I'm saying.
So with stance, I only say, let's be clear and explicit from the beginning on what are our preconceptions, our commitments.
And as a final point on this notion of stance, I think that has at least these two consequences. The first one is that
it makes us a little bit vulnerable, because when you say who you are exposed. Like, you can raise criticisms, and you are like, when you're being honest, and you say, this is what I want to do, people can criticize you. So that's one consequence. Another point is that I think it has a methodological advantage. Because when you give the context in which you work, if you explicit the stance, the relevant problems that you need to address become easily articulated. It's easier to configure what are the philosophical problems if you have your clear view on what you want to do.
Of course, that doesn't mean that the problems are easier. So this is not like you're not trying to cheat, I'm trying to make it simple. It just means that the problems articulate easier. They articulate easier, but not that they are easier. And then, it doesn't mean that the motivations for the stand are uncontestable. Of course you can contest and debate about the motivations. And of course it doesn't mean that problems in other stands are not meaningful.
And, of course, this idea is not new. I haven't created anything here. Lots of people think it this way. For example, Michel Dubol, his quotation is really dismissing against analytic philosophy. But he says that philosophy needs to have a debate over the way in which the problems are formulated. That's a necessary debate.
And I'm saying that I agree with this, but that doesn't mean that you need to become a continental philosopher. But I think that the strategy is really good.
Stephen French and James Lademann, they have their ontic structural realism. And what is their motivation for the ontic structuralism?
They say, quote,
it originated in the need to provide an ontology that can dissolve some of the metaphysical conundrums of modern physics. So they want to change the assumptions that configure the problems to create problems that dissolve the previous problems. So that's a change in the stance, that's a change in the view. And a recent book by Simon Frederick, he's got his therapeutic approach, he calls. And the motivation for the therapeutic approach is to claim that the basic problems encountered in the literature are based on misconceived assumptions, which can be changed, and the changing of the assumptions, they don't solve the problem, they dissolve the problem, and they create new problems. So this is, he puts forward his view for quantum mechanics, and I'm kind of doing something similar in terms of the strategy.
So what do I take the closed theory stance to do?
I guess a little bit different to do. to the explicit way in which Heisenberg puts it. So it's not identically the same. So it's a realist view. A closed theory represents some aspect of the world. There is the domains. A closed theory applies in a limited domain of phenomena. It's not universal, it's limited. And it provides an ultimate description of that phenomena in that domain. So the fact that that quantum mechanics doesn't predict the behavior of clocks in strong gravitational fields going high speed is not something that makes quantum theory false. It's something that limits the scope of quantum mechanics. And that's fine in the closed theory view. I say that because there's a quote in the literature where they say quantum mechanics is false because it doesn't predict the behavior of clocks in gravitational fields. And you can say, well, it's not meant to describe that, so it doesn't make it false. And there's a lot of... I mean, you can easily think of problems for this view. For example, how do you determine the domain? Or how do you determine the relationship between different theories in light of all the evidence that you have? So I accept that there are problems. But I would like to ask from you to be charitable and let me put these terms forward and then tell me where I think it takes us. So, and now there's some motivation for these terms. So, think about realist approaches to quantum mechanics. Everyone, realist or anti-realist or instrumentalist, we all know that there is no agreement on what is quantum theory about. Is it about particles, about waves, about wavicles, about clocks, about is it simply quantum objects? But then if you take quantum objects as a primitive ontology, then, I mean, there's a lot of debate about it. Do we really need a reference to the quantum state? Maybe we don't even need a reference. But where's the realism then? But there's a lot of debate. And we sort of agree that there's need for new concepts to realistically think about quantum mechanics. But at least in my view, there isn't a clear strategy on how to develop these new concepts. And then reflecting on the current options that we have in the literature, is there a common methodological guideline? Is there a basic assumption that you make that is common for many of them? And what would happen if we change that methodology? So that's basically a proposal. So one thing that goes across most of the alternative approaches to quantum theory is a certain conception of how quantum mechanics is meant to relate to classical mechanics. And closed theory's view challenges that traditional way. And I want to explain further what this is. But one thing that is common to many approaches is a specific way in which quantum mechanics needs to give us an explanation of the classical world. So, as a first observation, in the closed theory's view, the interpretation of quantum mechanics doesn't need to be tied to classical concepts. And that's about creating new concepts. So in this framework, that is a statement from the beginning. We don't need to be constrained by classical concepts.
That's really helpful.
Against what Heisenberg said in his book and in his writings, in my sense, the quantum theory is not closed. So he considered that quantum mechanics was already closed. But I say, I don't think it's closed because we don't have a realist interpretation about it. We don't have a story of what is the reference to the quantum state.
And there's some previous work in this direction, like Christian de Ronde's PhD thesis from 2011. But I think that he, in his framework that I won't discuss here specifically, but he doesn't elaborate on the internal issues of the notion of closed theories, and he doesn't analyze in detail this, the notion of inter-theoretic relationships involved. So that's why I will talk a bit more on that. So let's put this in the context of quantum mechanics. So let's say that we all agree that we will take the closed theory stance. So how does it fare with arguably the most basic problem for quantum mechanics, the measurement problem? Is it different to the standard views? Is it better? Is it really new? So I will analyze a bit further on this. And secondly, on the quantum classical limit. So one of the main reasons why the closed theory stance appears controversial is because, and explicitly in Heisenberg's description of it, it's like a view where different theories are completely isolated from each other, and there's no seemingly way to relate different theories. They are like islands without communication. So, in light of all the things that we know on how quantum and classical relate, so how to accommodate this? And then just recalling the methodological strategy. So Friedrich says, quote, "The idea is to resolve rather than to solve the paradoxes by proposing a perspective according to which at least some of the assumptions necessary to derive the paradoxes is not so much wrong as rather conceptually informed." So the message is, look at the basic preconceptions that give space for the paradoxes to arise and challenge those preconceptions. So that's the strategy, that's the motivation for the closed series. So one very simple description of the measurement problem. So you take the system, the apparatus, their composite system, they evolve according to Schrodinger equation, and at the end you have a superposition state. Statement 2, the empirical result obtained is unique. And 3, if you take the eigenvalue, eigenstate mean, that leads to a contradiction, right? Because on the one hand side you have one empirical result, and the state that the formalism gives you is not an eigenvector of that eigenvalue. So there you have the measurement problem. But let me give you some views on the measurement problem in the philosophical literature. So Guido Bacigalupi says that the measurement problem can be seen as a reaction to the need to justify the appearance of the classical world. He says, what is the measurement problem? It comes from the need to explain the classical world. Quantum mechanics doesn't seem to explain the classical world, and that is a problem for quantum mechanics, and that is a measurement problem. Lanzmann and Roybers say, the measurement problem consists in the fact that Schrodinger equation of quantum mechanics generally fails to predict that measurements have outcomes. Instead, and this is a pejorative for quantum mechanics, it apparently predicts empirically unacceptable superpositions. So, from the point of view of our classical conceptions, the predictions from the quantum theory are unacceptable. So that's a measurement problem. And the last one, he says, any decent interpretation of quantum mechanics should fulfill at least two criteria. First, it has to elucidate the physical meaning of its mathematical formalism and secure the empirical content of the theory. Okay, I agree with that.
In any interpretation that I could discuss with, I'll never say that we need to go beyond the empirical predictions. But what I can contest is the second claim, and it says it has to explain at least the appearance of the classical world. So we have the classical world, and we need to be able to explain it from a theory that we think is more fundamental. But there are a lot of presuppositions here, and the closed theory view challenges these preconceptions. So it's not obvious anymore, at least not in this framework, that quantum mechanics needs to justify the appearance of the classical features. And one last philosophical construction on the measurement problem. So Tim Modlin says measurement problem can be seen as an internal problem of quantum mechanics, where one of these three statements needs to be that they are all inconsistent, so you need to challenge one of them. And these statements are: the wave function is complete and it specifies all of the physical properties of the system. The second statement is: the wave function always evolves in accord with Schrödinger equation. For example, there are some interpretations that have challenged this assumption. For example, the collapse of the wave function. They say, no, it doesn't always evolve according to Schrödinger. When you make a measurement, it collapses. Or GRW. And the third one is that measurements always have determinate outcomes. So coming back to these philosophical claims about the need to explain the classical world. So what happens in the closed theory stance? To justify the appearance of classical features is not a strong and necessary requirement. It's not fair to ask another theory to explain what happens with things in another theory. So for example, classical mechanics and everyday experience doesn't need justification because it is secured by a closed theory. So if you consider classical mechanics as closed, you can give an account of lots of things that happen in our everyday world, and that's it. You don't need to explain that further. According to the closed theory stance, at least, you're happy with that. So you don't need to ask quantum mechanics to explain that. But then some reaction that could arise is, okay, but it is still the case that the final state in the measurement is a superposition state, and that doesn't have well-defined outcomes, properties, values. And that contradicts what we see in the laboratory. Okay. That's the motivation for the closed theory stance. In the closed theory stance, you need to interpret the formalism and the empirical findings, and you need to give a realist story about that. So in terms of these statements, I would say that the closed theory stance challenges the first one, because to say that the wave function specifies all of the properties of a system bears with it the preconception of what the system is and how are these properties. So you write your state in the basis of position, and you find values in position. And then you say, oh, but it's not giving me the values of the momentum. Well, maybe the formalism doesn't do that, and maybe it's fine. Maybe you need to give a realist account within these constraints. So it's not clear for the closed theory stance that the wave function needs to specify all of the physical properties of a system. And again, some work done in this direction, for example, in these papers, Da Costa and De Ronde work on elaborating metaphysical notions that give an account of the superposition, that are not based on classical metaphysical notions. But I won't talk about that, but I will say that they focus on the formalism in the superposition state. And the superposition state is being proven empirically their existence. There's
these experiments where they are doing experiments with superposition, all the new quantum information stuff and all these new experiments, they work on superposition states. So maybe we should focus on the superposition states instead of trying to find one vector, one eigenstate. Maybe we should be content with having the superposition. But I know this is all controversial, even in the way I'm explaining it is problematic. So the message from this stance in regards to the measurement problem is interpret the formalism, the quantum state, the quantum probability, but without having strong importation of concepts from other theories, in particular from classical theories. Don't try to enforce classical notions into quantum mechanics. So the second problem is the quantum classical limit. So in the philosophy of science, there's a long debate between the reductionism and the pluralism. In the philosophy of physics, we can see that there's a variety of methods by which we connect quantum and classical. For example, Ehrenfest theorem, the mathematical limits, or decoherence. And all of these methods are quite problematic. And I could bring arguments against each one of them. I won't do that now, but we know that they are all problematic to some extent. I will focus on Alice's interstructuralism, because as a response to these problematic issues, the interstructuralism puts forward a view in which you use semi-classical ideas, in which you change the standard notion of reductionism or pluralism. And what you have is mixtures of quantum and classical strategies, between quantum and classical methods and language, and making these theories interact in a novel way. And that is supported by empirical facts, by experiments where you can measure classical orbits in purely quantum experiments. So that justifies or motivates that interstructuralist view. But one important thing that happens there is that you know that. So in this view, you take a quantum problem, a quantum experiment, and you are able to measure and predict things based on classical dynamical structures, such as an orbit, a closed orbit, periodic orbits. But you know that these orbits are fictional. They are not really, really real. Really, really, really real. You can measure them, and maybe that you think that that's real. But you know that a trajectory in quantum mechanics is controversial. So what I'd like to focus in this second part is on assessing how the interstructuralist view fares with the closed theory view. Because in the interstructuralist view, you have a trail of concepts and empirical results and notions from one theory to the other, and that seems to be really fruitful. So how will that square with a view that tries to maintain some distance between the theories? So the strategy in the closed theories is that the quantum classical limit doesn't even need to be addressed from the beginning. The priority for the closed theories is to find closure to quantum mechanics, to provide physical concepts that can fruitfully explain the experiment and the formalism, such as it happens in the classical mechanics. And so, in terms of Boyk-Ilitch's structuralism and the closed theories, you can take at least these three options. So the first option is to say the closed theory stance project is completely undermined in light of the interstructuralism, because the interstructuralism proves a really concrete connection, a really strong connection between classical and quantum. And therefore, the closed theory stance doesn't hold. The second option is to say, is to strike back and say, no, in fact, the closed theory stance is an argument against the interstructuralism. And the third option is that maybe they can go along up to some point. They can collaborate, and this could give rise to a moderate version of the closed theories. Maybe weakening a bit the statements in the closed theories. So let me analyze these cases. So the interstructuralism is based by a structural model sort of explanation in which there is a trade of features from one domain, the classical, to the quantum. If you accept that, then maybe that means that the notion of domain is undermined, because you say we have the quantum domain and the classical domain, and then in the interstructuralism you find such a type of connections that maybe that undermines the very notion of closed domain. So if you accept that, then the closed theory's view is undermined. But you can object to that. For example, saying that the structural explanation is problematic, and if you attack that, then that doesn't undermine the closed theory stance anymore. Or you can say that that in all the cases where the interstructuralist finds support, for example, in the semi-classical experiment, for example, in the Rydberg atoms, in the wave functions carrying, in the helium atom, for example, the helium atom, you can say that the very way in which the problem is formulated is already semi-classical. So it's kind of this kind of objection is kind of trying to dissolve the very interstructuralist strategy. Or you can say an external objection. You can say in the interstructuralist approach is powerful, heuristically speaking. It's a good way to provide new experimental predictions. It's a good way to provide explanation of experiments that are being done or about models. But in the end, it doesn't give a realist response to the problems of quantum mechanics. If you see all the work in the interstructuralism, they don't say what is a quantum particle. They don't say what is the reference to the quantum state. So this objection, what it claims is that actually the closed theory stance and the interstructuralist, they work on different levels. So they are not in the same league. The closed theory stance is trying to provide a realist response to the problems of quantum mechanics. And the interstructuralist account is trying to provide us with new heuristics, which can be as powerful as you might like, but this is still heuristics, and it's not about the reference of the formalism. So the second view could be that it not only doesn't undermine, but the closed theory stance is an argument against the interstructuralism. And so the semi-classical approach, according to Bokelich, provides physical insight into what is otherwise often opaque quantum dynamics. So in light of this strange quantumness, she says, my interstructuralist view provides new physical insight into that is not easy to understand. And so the closed theory stance can raise an argument against that, because the interstructuralist could be seen as a stopgap explanation, as something that is temporary, something that once the closed theory stance project is successful, this quantum dynamics will not be opaque anymore. They will be understandable in the very meaning of that word. So the interstructuralist could be seen as a temporary intermediate step in the project of the closed theory stance. So that's a way to argue that the closed theory stance and the interstructuralist are not very as problematic when seen together. And the last one, which is the most work in progress type of idea that I've been thinking about only recently, is to make the statements of the closed theory stance
a bit in a weak version. So don't go all the way with the ontological pluralism. Don't go with the isolating the theory so much. And which is, accept that there's some continuity between theories, such as, for example, the interstructuralism and all the support that they argue. But then also maintain the autonomy between the what you could be weakly close theories. And that relates to some work being done in the context of weak emergence or effective theories. But again, this is more like in progress. So, after having analyzed the measurement problem and the quantum classical limit, so some conclusions. So the closed series view is originated in Heisenberg, and then is a bit criticized or a bit modified and taken up as some sort of a stance towards quantum mechanics. There is work already being done in this direction, and the problems of quantum mechanics, for example, the measurement problem and the quantum classical limit, are framed in this novel way. In the measurement problem, you change the strategy. You don't want to justify the appearance of classical anymore, because that is what the closed theory stance tells you. And in the quantum classical limits, you are not trying to recover the classical from the quantum. The idea of the closed series is to change the way in which you present the intertheoretic relationships. And the closed theory doesn't say that there is no intertheoretic relationship, but what it changes is the priority. Only when quantum mechanics is fully closed, when you have the classical, when you have the concepts, the physical concepts to interpret quantum mechanics, you can then try to build bridges between the theories. And then there's, I think, a fruitful work to be done in connecting the closed theory stance and the interstructuralism. And again, saying what I said at the beginning, I didn't try to convince you to think in this way. It's not that I'm not saying it's the best way forward or the only. I'm only saying that this philosophical approach is worthwhile. Thank you.